Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for the invitation to speak here. As the title says, I'm going to be talking about biochar nanoparticles and their interactions with other types of engineered nanoparticles, specifically cerium oxide nanoparticles. We're looking at others, but today I'm just going to be talking about ceria. This is my co-author, Peng Yi, who did all the work. Without him, I wouldn't be here. Of course, I'd be in the lab probably doing the work. Of course, without me, he probably would be on the street, so it's a two-way street. Okay, so this study takes into consideration that engineered nanoparticles can enter soils through the application of biosolids and, of course, at sites where they're used heavily or manufactured. Therefore, the stability of engineered nanoparticles in soil is of concern. And soil, besides containing the usual minerals and or natural organic matter, can contain pyrogenic carbonaceous materials. Natural materials known as black carbon are ubiquitous in soils and in some places represent a very high percentage of the carbon in soils. And then, of course, we all have heard that biochar is being considered as a soil amendment. So the interactions of engineered nanoparticles with black carbon and or biochar surfaces are of interest. And an understanding of these interactions can provide information that would help assess the bioavailability of engineered nanoparticles to organisms and can aid in the design of nanotechnologies that might be used for pesticide delivery or nutrient delivery in agricultural systems. And finally, the nanoparticulate form of biochar is of interest in itself because it relates to the fate and translocation of biochar in soil. It's known that biochar fragments in soil, there was just a paper recently published on that, and the translocation of small biochar particles is perhaps one way in which this material moves through the soil column. So to start, let me just show you these images of TEM images of ceria that we purchased from Sigma Aldrich. There's nothing really remarkable about this except just to say that the material that we bought was just as the good doctor ordered. The powder X-ray diffraction spectrum is consistent with crystallites about 18 to 20 nanometers in size. And on the right there, you can see that that's not too far off. Nothing really unexpected here. So biochar particles, as far as I know, no one has really characterized these things, and I'm going to be talking about that. So how did we prepare them? Well, the biochar in bulk is made from pecan shells at 500 degrees anaerobically, and then they were pulverized and simply suspended in distilled water and sonicated briefly at low sonication energy. I should say that we've also done dilute base extraction, and we get essentially the same thing. So after taking the supernatant and filtering through a 0.45 micrometer cellulose acetate membrane, we get a suspension of biochar particles, nanoparticles, that gives a solution a faintly yellow color. And so here I'm going to show you some images of these particles and to tell you about the different kinds of particles that we actually see. It's pretty interesting. For one thing, we see hard particles, which is shown on the right of the grid over here. Let me pray. I press the right button here. Nope, that's not the right button.
The top button.
Okay. So this is a hard particle over here, and then on the other side we have what we're calling soft or deformable particles. I'll show you some more in a minute. The hard particle, we didn't look exactly at this one, but we looked at one right here. This is shown on the right. This shows an onion skin-like structure, typical of soot, in which the polyaromatic sheets form graphite-like microcrystallites and form this kind of onion-like like structure. So on the next slide, I show more of these soft particles. As you can see, they kind of wrap around the grid a little bit, but they do maintain a particulate, nanoparticulate size in solution, because if we filter the suspension through a 0.02 micrometer pore size filter, we essentially remove all of them from the suspension. So when they contact the grid and then when the solution is vacuum dried, they cling to the grid and kind of deform around them. On the right, you will see a hard particle aggregate that's appears to be attached to the grid by way of some soft material. Right here, you can see that in various places along here. We don't know what this soft material is. It could be humic-like colloids that are formed from carbonaceous material that stay floating in the water. So the next images show some cryo-TEM images. This is where you take a droplet and plunge it into liquid ethane and then transfer it to liquid nitrogen. So you're looking at a TEM that hasn't been subjected to vacuum drying. And what we have found are what look to be like nanotubes. And so we were surprised about this. That's shown here. We also found it on another place on the grid, shown nicely here. Here's this nanotube down here. I guess it's not too surprising, because when you char organic matter, you do form nanotubes, apparently. This has been shown before in natural chars. I can't rule out the possibility that it's contamination, but these are fresh grids, and my colleague Peng Yi tells me that to see these, if they were contaminants, would be extremely unlikely. So we're going with the notion that they are not impurities and that they are formed in the biochar. Okay, so here's a bright field. I'm going to show you a series of slides showing some elemental analyses here. Here's a bright field TEM image of nanochar particles, and I'm going to move that over here. And then here's a dark field image of the same nanoparticle aggregation, and I'm going to move that down here. And then this one, using energy dispersive X-ray spectroscopy, we're able to image just the carbon. And the red here, this is the grid. It's made out of carbon, but you can see the red dots here, that those are carbon. The carbon only in the nanoparticles. And then if we look for oxygen, we see oxygen distributed that way. And these images are lined up exactly. And then we also found high concentrations of calcium, which are shown here. So if we go now to the composite, we see that there are particles that, like this one, for example, that are, and couple down here that are virtually all carbon, and then the other particles have mixtures of carbon, oxygen, and calcium. And then now if we look at this carbon particle here, this big carbon particle up here, we find, surprisingly, that it's got a completely amorphous structure. You recall the soot-like onion skin structure I showed you earlier. But this is completely amorphous. This is a 5-nanometer bar down here. So that was a little bit surprising, too. Now, if we look at a calcium-rich area on here, this area in this circle is calcium-rich and also oxygen-rich. And if we look there, we see crystalline forms of what appear to be calcite, calcium carbonate, on the biochar, and there's a fair amount of it. It's not possible to quantify it with this technique, but the sample itself had about 1% of calcium in it to start with, so it's not surprising. And we've seen this material also looking at the bulk biochar. So, having shown you what nano-sized biochar looks like, we did some aggregation and heteroaggregation experiments. This first slide just shows the zeta potential of the Ceria nanoparticles. And you can see that they're positively charged at low pH and negatively charged at high pH. And they go through this transition period where they're very unstable and they self-aggregate. This is well known. This is nothing new. Biochar, on the other hand, essentially is negatively charged throughout the environmental pH range, showing a point of zero charge at around 2.8 or so, but very negatively charged, and more so as you go up in pH, consistent with the dissociation of carboxyl groups and then hydroxyl groups. So now, using time-resolved dynamic light scattering, we can determine the aggregation kinetics of the Ceria nanoparticles, the biochar nanoparticles, and then the two together. And this one shows the Ceria nanoparticles. And you see that they start out at about 200 nanometers hydrodynamic radius, and depending on the salt concentration, the aggregates can aggregate at very low salt concentration. They're very stable for a long period of time, and they aggregate. And looking at the kinetics of aggregation, we can determine an attachment efficiency, which is simply the rate constant for aggregation divided by the maximum rate constant that you would see under conditions where aggregation was complete. So that's the attachment efficiency, and this was done at pH 5.3 for Ceria, where it starts out being quite stable in solution. It's positively charged at that pH. And we can see then, we can calculate a critical coagulation concentration looking at the attachment efficiency as a function of sodium chloride concentration, and we see that the critical coagulation concentration is about 22 millimolar of sodium ion. And this is because sodium is shielding the charge, chloride is shielding the positive charge on the Ceria and causing it to self-associate. Now, if we do the same with biochar nanoparticles, we did this at pH 7, and the treatment is quite the same. And if we look at the aggregation kinetics, the attachment efficiency is a function of sodium chloride concentration. In this case, we're looking at the effect of sodium ion. Sodium, being positively charged, shields the negative charge on the biochar particles and causes them to coagulate. And you can see that the critical coagulation concentration in the case of the biochars is about 10 times higher than it was for the ceria. And calcium is more effective. This is not surprising at all. It's been shown for many different types of negatively charged particles. Calcium is better at shielding charge and may even bridge particles together. So now we looked at the heteroaggregation kinetics, and in this case, we take advantage of the fact that the scattering light intensity associated with ceria nanoparticles is quite a bit higher than it is with the biocharged nanoparticles, more than 10 times higher. So essentially in these experiments, we're looking at only the ceria aggregation. But the biochar nanoparticles are essentially invisible to the technique. So you can see that these are now the heteroaggregation at pH 5.3 of ceria with biochar. And these are different concentration, keeping the ceria constant. They're different concentrations of biochar. And when we look at this, hydrodynamic diameter is a function of biochar nanoparticle concentration. We see that at low concentration, the ceria is stable, but as we go up in concentration, it heteroaggregates with the biochar, presumably. And although, like I say, we're looking only at ceria here. And then it again becomes stable again at high biochar concentrations. And we follow this at the same time by zeta potential measurements. And we see that at low biochar concentrations, the particles that are in suspension there are positively charged, and then they go through a zero point here, right at the maximum, and then they become negatively charged again. So we're interpreting this in terms of a charge neutralization, charge reversal process. So according to this mechanism, at low biochar nanoparticle concentrations, we have only one or a few biochar particles associating with the ceria, and the net charge on the ceria is still positive. So they're still stable in solution. As we increase the concentration, now we start neutralizing the charge, and we get to a maximum point. And then as we go to high concentration, we have charge reversal, in which now we cover the ceria nanoparticles with biochar particles, and they're now stable again. Okay, I think I'm going to skip this slide and move on to the last slide before the summary. We also have shown that heteroaggregation of ceria and biochar is pretty irreversible. These are duplicate experiments, one performed at pH 5.3 without any change, and pH 5.3 throughout the experiment, and we see the heteroaggregation, the particle size getting larger, and we repeated the experiment, but this time about midway through the experiment, we increased the pH from 5.5 to 11, and we expected to see disaggregation at that point because now both the ceria and the biochar particles are negatively charged and they should repel from each other. Well, indeed, we observe that the heteroaggregation stops, but they don't dissociate. And so this indicates that heteroaggregation is irreversible, at least on the time scale we're talking about. So in summary then, we see several kinds of biochar nanoparticles. We see hard and soft. We see amorphous and onion skin structured like soot. We see calcium rich and calcium, that should be calcium poor and calcium rich particles. And the calcium rich particles have what appears to be calcite. And we also see nanotubes. Biochar nanoparticles are fairly stable to aggregation, as indicated by their high coagulation concentration in both sodium chloride and calcium chloride. Ceria nanoparticles are less stable to aggregation in the presence of biochar nanoparticles at a given sodium chloride concentration due to their opposite surface charges, and the point of greatest instability occurs at a zeta potential of zero. And so we're suggesting that heteroaggregation occurs by a charge neutralization, charge reversal mechanism. And heteroaggregation appears to be poorly reversible. So with that, I'll just acknowledge Dr. Charisma Latau, who did some of the pioneering experiments, and the USDA AFRI program. Thank you.